Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
me. A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Tech Talk.
Yes, it is. This is Tech Talk.
Oh, boy.
WRR. Yeah. I think we got, here we go. Let's try that.
Okay.
All right.
That's Michael Tech Talk Castle. I'm Dave Sparky Saganaki welcoming you to another edition of Tech Talk.
Another great show on Tech Talk here today. Yeah, we've got, of course, our regular Jay Garman is going to be in at us here in just a little while. And,
Jay is so good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, no, I love having him on. I can't wait to hear the answer to last week's question and, of course, get a new one from him. But also, too, somewhere in the middle of the show here, anyways, I'm going to throw in for us a interview that I did when I was out in San Francisco at Oracle Open World 2008. And with Marius, I'll have to look at his name in a second and try to pronounce it for you right before we do the interview. I'm going to practice it when I'm when we're listening offline.
Yeah.
But he's a fantastic guy, incredibly intelligent person, just a pleasure to talk with. I felt honored to be sitting in the same room with him. He does the
He must be smart.
Oracle Mix stuff. Yeah. Trust me, Dave, it doesn't take that much. Yeah. You've known me long enough now.
Yeah.
And he's the thought person behind the Oracle Mix, which is the Oracle social networking system, which if you're looking for information about Oracle or help or support and all this other stuff, you're probably familiar with Oracle Mix. But if you're not, it's just real. Even if you're not into Oracle, you have no interest in doing anything Oracle, I found it fascinating just to hear about some of the things that people have to worry about when they're dealing with creation of a Web 2.0 social networking type of environment and all the things that went into it. Similar to the conversation I played for us last week that we had with Justin Kestelin. So
yeah, it's a big undertaking.
So good. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Of course, there's a lot of stuff in the news this week and all sorts of fun stuff happening.
They tried to kill off Steve Jobs again.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I had that in my starred Google Reader notes. I just noticed it this morning. Yeah. They're, in fact, the FCC is investigating, or is it the SEC?
I think it's
the SEC is investigating.
Yeah, the stock dropped, I guess, 6%.
Yeah.
It was a heart attack this time, they claimed.
Yes, and it was on, it was actually put, boy, let's see now, the story comes from Bloomberg, but who actually put this up? I'm trying to find right now. I don't think it was Bloomberg. It was on CNN. It was a CNN citizen journalist website.
Yeah.
And what that means essentially is
a rumor.
Yeah. Citizen journalist. You know, like
smear, rumor.
Yeah, you know, if anybody wants to get press creds at any of these big shows like we were able to do with Oracle, just tell them you're a citizen journalist. I mean, not only will that work, you'll probably get better seating than your traditional media journalists these days. So I did get some pictures up of the show too. You can see the blogger seating and things like that. I was probably going to have this as a cool site for the week this week, but I'm going to mention it ahead of time, is if you go to posterous.com, P-O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S, like posterous, imposterous, posterous, I'm not sure. Yeah. I think it's posterous, though, because it's a really neat idea for a blogging site, is that it is just essentially takes it a step back from texting, but you can text to it, you can email to it, you can email pictures, you can email audio.
Ah.
It processes it all. It's all based upon your email address or text ID, you know, your phone number.
Yeah.
So once you send it an email, that automatically creates an account. In fact, you can do it right now. If you're listening to the show in front of your computer, do it right now. Send an email to post@posterous.com, you'll get a confirmation back, and your new website will be whatever your email, front part of your email address is, techtalk.posterous.com. So for us, it's techtalk.posterous.com. You can go check it out. And
wow.
I've posted some odds and ends up there and done some other things, and occasionally I'll email something to it. You can link it with your Twitter account and all the
other
stuff.
So it's not really necessarily social. It could just be file storage or text storage, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Or, you know, reminding yourself of things.
Yep. Kind of, you can do anything you want with it. Yeah. I've got my brother-in-law is actually off in Colorado right now, and I hooked him on into this, and I got him geeked up about it and doing that instead of the Facebook thing. He had this posting to Facebook.
Right, so you could track him easier when he's traveling. Yeah. Well, I didn't mean that track. I meant you could follow. Even that sounds.
Yeah.
You could stalk him. I don't know.
You
could stay in touch.
We can stay in touch. Yeah. We can see what he's doing. We can see what he's having. And this had come up as well. Now I'm looking through, and of course I've lost the email here. I apologize. I think the gentleman's name was Bill or Bob or something along those lines. But anyways, I wanted to answer a reader email, too, that had come to me a couple of weeks ago. I had meant to answer it last week, and I did not get around to it directly. Reader had sent me an email, listener had sent me an email. I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those Saturday mornings. I just finished a Vivano from Starbucks, so I should be all, you know, juiced and ready to go here. But instead, I think it's slowing me down. Oh, you know, tip for budding podcasters and radio people too.
Yeah.
Banana milkshakes, not a good idea.
I kind of sound like I'm always drinking a banana milkshake. with the bananas in it. Yeah.
Your phlegm to info ratio gets way out of balance.
Thanks for that, sharing that with the listeners, Mike.
So I had a banana chocolate Vivano this morning. That's why I'm. But anyways, back on some sort of a track. He had sent me an email. He was asking. He's teaching a class out on the East Coast somewhere, and wanted to get the audio for our interview with Greg Basil, who had done Swap Tree, if you remember that,
way
back when. And you know, and had gone online, had gone to the Podomatic site, and you can go look through the archives and so on. You can see that the podcast was there. You can see that there was at some point an interview, but when you don't go and try and click on it, of course nothing comes in place and there's nothing there. And he had asked me, why is this? Is there something wrong?
Is it dead linky?
It is a dead link. What happens is, and this is one of the reasons I am thinking of moving our podcast site to somewhere else, is that I do have an upper limit on the amount of space that Podomatic, who is our current podcast provider, gives us. It's very slim. They're pretty stingy about it. It's about 500 meg that they allow, and that's with an average of 20 meg per show. You know, you can do the numbers yourself. It's about 25 shows, so you know, a couple of months worth of shows is all I can have on there. However, the good news is, if you do just like our friend who's teaching the class did, send me an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm. I will put it up for you on Posterous. I'll give you a Dropbox link. I'll throw it on Mediafire. If you've got Gmail account and can handle the size of the audio file, I'll just email it to you. Whatever you want to do. Just let me know what date it was from, and I will shoot you the link out right away.
Did you mention a file limit on Posterous? Is there one?
There is.
There has to be
one.
Sure.
I don't know that there's a storage limit, but there is an upload limit of, I think it's like 100 meg.
Oh,
that's
pretty good.
It's still pretty decent. Yeah. It's comparable to a lot of the free file storage sites. And the cool thing, too, is like if you send a picture, of course, the picture shows up right away. I've sent our newsletter to it via email. I've included it on the newsletter distribution list. It shows up as the HTML like it should. It doesn't put it as an attachment. And with the audio, it's great. It has a built-in little Flash audio player, so
cool.
People can go in and listen to the audio right online, or there's a built-in download link. So it's hot. It's really, like I said, it's going to be one of the cool sites for the week this week, but I'm telling you about it. You get
preview.
A preview.
A preview, a tease.
It's a very special Tech Talk today.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. so
welcome to the Tech Talk Den.
That's right. Yeah. We've got a preview. Yeah. So check that out and give it a look. I would highly recommend that. And like I said, I wanted to answer that question. And thanks so much for listening too and caring enough about the shows and about the very very cool people we've had on that you were willing to send an email and follow up with that. I hope that that goes well with your class, whatever your name is, because I've lost your email now. So
into the email sea.
Yes.
The tsunami of email.
It's, you know, I could do a search. I've got my Gmail open right now. I could look and I could find it, but I'd be typing and yeah. You know, it's kind of like trying to eat and drink when you're on the microphone too. You know, here's another tip for those budding podcasters: lip smacking and chomping and, yeah, not the
celery and tortilla chips are not a good idea.
No, the ratio of grossness and saliva to information tends to head upwards as well. So you got to avoid that too. Well, hey, should we kick right into giving Mr. Garman a call?
Oh, we'd love
call?
To hear from Jay.
You know, I've
got to step out for a minute. Say hello to Jay for me.
Uh oh. We're you know, he misses you, Dave. He really does. Every time I
miss
call
Jay
him,
too.
He always starts off every time.
I'm much nicer to him than you are.
Well, at least wait long enough to say hello.
I'll say hello.
Because he always comes on and he says,
where the hell's
you know,
Dave
and Mike, I'm so happy to hear from you guys. And then I have to let him in for the big
news.
Well,
just tell him Dave's in the bathroom or something.
just lie to him.
Yeah,
just start lying to him.
Jay!
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Fellas.
I was just telling Dave that every time I call you and it's just me, the sound of disappointment in your voice grows and grows every week. And so he was just before we were going to bring you on. He's, well, I got to go. And
I've got to step out for a minute. Mike wants me to say hello. Hi, Jay. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, sir.
And we're so glad to have you.
That would be explain why you leave, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I'm just going into the next room for a minute. I'll be back in a second.
Just long enough to miss your whole bit.
No,
Dave,
I got to listen closely. I'll listen to it on the podcast.
Okay, all right. Fantastic.
See you later.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Dave has left the building. He's, or at least the studio, anyways. So, Jay, Mr. Garman, very happy to have you back on. I want to make a quick note to listeners that if they're not following you on The Written Weird, that they should be. And, in fact, there's some good posts you've been posting again. Not only are you giving us some excellent insight and information and comparative pricing to what $700 billion actually will do for us these days, or compare it to the Apollo space program and Oppenheimer's projects and things like this, but also, too, you've just come out with some new free to read to anybody who's following your blog, fiction from one of America's premier fiction authors, Jay Garman.
It is worth every penny I'm charging you, too, believe me.
I have not had the chance to look through it. You just put it up yesterday, I think, or the day before, and I just have not had a chance to get through it. But judging by your previous work, I can tell you that is not true. It's certainly going to be something worth the time that it takes to read it. So I know some of the other stuff that you've got up there I enjoyed quite a bit. So
you are a gracious critic, and more so than most of the fiction editors I've come across. So you need to be in charge of a magazine. I could make dozens more dollars a year if you were.
Hey, there you go. That'll be my next step. That'll be my next big step. I'm gonna enter into all sorts of failing media.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm in terrestrial radio now, so I figure that's got a lifespan of maybe 2 to 5 more years, and that'll be perfect time to go into newspapers. And I can eventually work my way back to Papyrus and Stone Slabs, and then that'll be time to retire.
So. You know, it's kind of sad. I kill myself to try to get published in one of the big three science fiction magazines, Asimov Science Fiction, Analog, or Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction.
Ah, yes.
And collectively, they have a circulation of under 50,000 people, but combined.
Are you
and
serious?
Yeah, it's amazingly small, and my Geek Trivia newsletter has 60,000 subscribers, so I'm sweating blood trying to get into one of three publications, which collectively have less publishing power than my regular gig.
Wow.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I feel compelled.
Oh, you know what though? I totally understand it, and it doesn't even matter if you knew that it was 500 readers collectively. I mean, Asimov's you know, FNSF. These are the iconic publications. This is what you'd have the flashlight under the covers and be reading at midnight when your parents had told you to go to sleep. You know, so absolutely, I totally buy into that.
Well, I'm by myself. I'm still an analog subscriber. I rarely have time to read the magazines that I subscribe to, but I, just out of sheer devotion to the genre, I'm going to keep giving them my money. Me and 49,999 other people who are keeping that, you know,
yep,
iconic but archaic medium alive.
Yep. Well, you know, and I just came back from San Francisco, and in the San Francisco International Airport, they have all along the walkway where you go to your baggage line, they have a collection of science fiction and literature and toys and space stuff, all from like the 20s through the 60s, and all lined along. And it's some of the coolest stuff. And one of the neatest parts is when you get to, they have a whole collection of some of the books and magazines and things like that that were so popular at the time. And it's amazing. And of course, analog is right in there. And you're right. You know, I haven't been a subscriber of the Analog Magazine for many years, but I will still occasionally pick up. They have the yearly collection of short stories and things, and I'll pick that up from the bookstore if I'm going on a trip or whatever. It's always good to have those. You know, short fiction is kind of a in some ways it seems almost like a dying art, but it's such a perfect fit for our current culture to have these little bite-sized pieces of things that you can read, you know, and get a full story in 15 minutes and get that completion, that full story arc in 15 minutes. I don't know why it isn't more popular, probably just because it's so difficult to do.
It is difficult to do, and there's not any money in it. I think it's largely an issue of the writers are not putting any time in it. John Scalzi, who has a great blog called The Whatever, talks about why it's not worth his time to write short fiction as opposed to novels, because, you know, he'll write, a 15,000 word short story and make $400 on it, or he'll write a 100,000 word novel and make $25,000 on it.
Yeah.
You know, which, you do the math on the per word count there, it's much more profitable to be a novel writer. Yeah. So,
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, mentioning Scalzi is I just read what's it called, Android's Dream, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
The sheep novel.
Yes. Yes, which of course the title comes from a famous Philip K. Dick novel, Android's Dream of Electric Sheep. But it's a great book. I had heard of Scalzi, but I hadn't really read anything by him prior to that, and picked that up, and I definitely would recommend his writing to people. It's very tight, it's very clean, and he's got a good sense of humor about him. So it's a lot of fun to read through that stuff. And he drops just enough insider references to make you feel like you're kind of smart, you know.
Yes.
If you catch him.
I am a great lover of Scalzi's work, and he's writing a sequel to Android's Dream right now called The High Castle, which is another Philip K. Dick reference.
Ah,
so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, well, that's one of my all-time favorite Dick novels, of course. We could spend another hour here talking about
the
sci-fi stuff. We should probably kick off into just to remind people, though, go to thewrittenweird.com, and that is written weird. We're not mispronouncing that. It's actually writtenweird.blogspot.com. Is that right? Or
that is correct.
Okay, very
I'm
good.
I'm too cheap to pay for my own parking server, so it's a blogger URL.
That's right. I'll try to remember this week to put it in the newsletter as well. I'll give you the link to it there. So if you're listening and you don't have a pen, don't go driving off of the road and trying to write this down. I'll put it in the newsletter for you, and people will get that. And we should probably follow up with last week's geek trivia question. And if you could remind listeners what that was.
Well, I was debunking the old engineering myth of NASA spent millions of dollars on a pen that would write in zero gravity, and the crafty Soviets just used a pencil. And my question was, what did NASA actually spend on their first lot of space pens? Because it wasn't millions of dollars.
And not just the first space pen, but the first lot, the entire lot of space pens.
They bought a lot of 400 space pins for $956. It has 239 a pin. They did this in 1968, in the early part of the Apollo program, and that was a 40% discount off the retail price because these were retail pins. These pins actually sold to the average consumer for $3.98, which in 1968 is still kind of pricey for a pin, but is way cheaper than the millions of dollars NASA supposedly spent. Now, a little background on this. Both NASA and the Soviets originally sent pencils into space, and they both quickly realized that pencils are a stupid thing to send into space because wood and graphite are flammable. And until the Apollo 1 fire, everyone used 100% oxygen atmosphere. So you're basically putting a really flammable atmosphere and really flammable things that flake off and leave little shavings in the same space with electricity. This is not a good idea. So NASA's response to that was to build not a better, not the space pen, but a better pencil. And so they developed mechanical pencils that were supposedly shatterproof and did really had really special kind of graphites that cost $129 a piece.
Oh, man.
So Congress find out about this and rightfully chastise NASA for building a $130 pencil. So NASA went to the private sector and said, we'll take bids on, you know, a better writing of it that's cheaper. Yep. And they didn't have to look long because a company called Fisher was already making pens that would write in zero gravity. And they called them space pens, the Fisher AG-7 space pen.
So they already even knew that it would write in zero gravity, and it was called a space pen. And then all it took NASA was basically to look into a catalog and pick out
basically.
Space pens.
and so they got them actually at a 40% discount. But the funny thing is, so did the Soviets, because as soon as the Soviets found out about them, they ordered 100 in 1969. And they got sold the same price as NASA. So Soviets aren't these great pencil lovers either. They're like, as soon as they found a cheap pen that would work in space, they did it too.
Yep. Now, that was interesting, though. I had not heard or even thought about the fact that, your graphite and wood would be flammable. I was just thinking about the problem with keeping it sharp enough to write with, you'd have shavings, and graphite, of course, is pretty friable as well, and so it'd be, you know, little pieces of things all over the place.
Well, when they sent the actual wooden pencils, they were a little smarter. They were wax bonded, so they wouldn't flake that much, but they had regular pencil sharpeners they actually had to keep in this zippered up sleeve, so you were shaving them basically in a little pocket, and you got to be very careful with that, and that became a problem. So that's when NASA went to the mechanical pencils, which they paid an exorbitant amount for. Part of that may be misleading because they basically bought a $1.75 mechanical pencil mechanism and then put them in these custom designed housings that wouldn't break and were big enough to use with a spacesuit glove and whatnot. And I think part of the reason they were so expensive is they didn't manufacture them. I'm pretty sure they just took three engineers aside and said, here's you really highly educated, expensive dudes, just spend a couple of weeks making 100 of these by hand.
and we'll pay you $200 an hour. And
yes.
I can see that adding up. Well, hey, you know, when the cost of a hammer is $2,500, what's the difference really?
So. Exactly. The zeros just start blurring when you deal with Apollo program numbers.
Exactly. Which also too is interesting. As I mentioned, you've got on your blog a great rundown of that $700 billion bailout versus what Apollo cost us. And I posted a comment up there because there was a related article on MSNBC which actually talks about equating dollars in Apollos, and it's an easier way to understand our budgetary figures when you just use the term Apollos. You know, how many Apollos would this buy? So
it's a pretty easy figure because Apollo was about $25 billion in 1969, which is about $150 billion today. So for those of you counting along at home, the bailout package of just the bailout portion, which was $700 billion when I wrote the article, and now it's like $1.4 trillion, the $700 billion figure was over 4.5 Apollo programs worth of money.
Mm-hmm.
I believe with my rough calculations, you could have put an entire 53-man NFL roster on the moon for the cost of the bailout.
Yes, yeah, yeah, which is excellent. You know, and they should. That would be far more fun than watching the Bears lose yet again here on the ground. So...
and as I've said, the new Soldier Field looks like a UFO landed on the old Soldier Field, so mm-hmm. there's some symmetry there.
Well, hey, we should kick into a good question for next week. And just to recap that answer, it was $2.39 per pen times 400 pens, so somewhere north of
$956.
So instead of however many millions you may have contemplated that costing. And so for next week's question, I know you've got something good lined up for us.
Well, the baseball playoffs have started, which is probably not a happy subject for those of you in Chicago, considering how the White Sox and the Cubs are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought I would bring this around to baseball and the election, and this one's going to be a little straightforward. What past president of the United States almost had his career stopped before it even started because he played minor league baseball? He wasn't very good at it, but because this past president played minor league baseball in his youth, his career was almost ruined.
His career was almost ruined by this, and I'm assuming you're not going to tell us how it was ruined because that would give us too much information.
Yes, it would give you too much information.
Interesting. Now we can kind of narrow that down a little bit, though, because I'm sure that the minor league baseball did not start as an actual thing until this century. So interesting. That I don't have. I mean, I can make some guesses, but boy, I don't have a real strong idea. I have not heard this one at all.
I'll give you an extra clue. The guy knew this could be a future problem, so he played minor league baseball under an alias.
Ah.
So you will not find the name of this president. If you look up all the presidents, you can find the one that played minor league baseball. But if you look up the annals of minor league baseball, you'll never find this president's name.
You won't see
the name.
Because
he did not play under his real name.
That's awesome. That is a great question. And, yeah, and as we are getting close in on the playoffs here and watching both the Sox and the Cubs implode yet again, particularly disappointing with the Cubs, who had such a strong season so far. Of course, Sports Corner just covered a lot of this stuff right before I came on, so I don't want to bore people with yet more sports, as exciting as it is. Well, Jay, we'll let you go, and we will hopefully get a good response to that and good answers to that. As always, thank you very much for coming on, and as I said, I'm going to point people to the Written Weird through the newsletter too.
I appreciate it, man. You can tell your partner to come back in the booth now. I'm leaving.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know that guy. We love him, though. I'm not thinking of getting rid of him. We'll keep Dave around. All right. Well, hey, take care, Jay, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take it easy.
All right. Take care. And that was Jay Garman with our Geek Trivia of the Week, of course. Fantastic, as always, hearing from him. Don't forget, next week's question, send the answer to techtalk@wrlr.fm. And the question is, what president almost did not become president? Not because of anything with their political background, but because they were involved in minor league baseball. And hey, we're going to catch you up with paying some bills, keeping the doors open and all that. And I want to remind people, too, that, you know, WRLR is kept open and active because of listeners who are listening, just like you, who are willing and interested in keeping us open. We are a not-for-profit radio station and organization, and would love to have you go to WRLR.fm, that is www.wrlr.fm, and donate. There's a donate button right there, and you can put in whatever you feel is appropriate, whatever you feel this show is worth. And we'll be right back at you, though, in just a couple minutes. Take care, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Marius from Oracle Open World about Oracle Mix.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
Classic Printery Incorporated has all your printing needs and services at a one-stop shop. Located in Round Lake, Illinois, Classic Printery offers products and services such as announcement and invitations, business cards, flyers, barcoding, brochures, laminating, bulk mail preparation and service, complete typesetting and art department, postal sorting and delivery, raffle tickets, resumes, engraving, on-time delivery, and much, much more. Classic Printery has complete in-house printing with old-fashioned service. Classic Printery is a proud sponsor of WRLR, and with over 29 years of experience, Classic Printery, Inc. is a one-stop shop for all your printing needs. Located at 336 West Main Street in Round Lake. Their telephone number is 847-546-6555. That is 847-546-6555.
Sponsorship is the best way to attract attendance to your event and generate revenue to your business. WRLR is a community radio station that serves Lake County, and becoming a sponsor keeps your money within the community. To become a sponsor underwriter at affordable rates on WRLR, visit the official website at www.wrlr.fm for details, or give us a call at 847-546-9757. That is 847-546-9757. This is 98.3 FM WRLR, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Hey, Lake County, don't forget to tune in to 98.3 FM every Wednesday from 10 to 1.
For Midday Madness.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you heard it. That's right. Midday Madness every Wednesday from 10 to 1 right here on 98.3 FM WRLR.
That's crazy.
Yes, indeed. Midday Madness. You don't want to miss that. If you're listening to the Tech Talk reboot on Wednesday mornings, they follow us right after that. And we are back. Now, I have got a fantastic interview. This interview took place on the floor at Oracle Open World. It is with Marius Chortilla, and I apologize, Marius, if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly. Marius is the senior manager from the Project Management Office of Web Architecture, and he is one of the lead designers and really the strong backbone of the Oracle Mix product, and you're going to hear a lot about it. There are some web links in here as well that we've asked him to share with us. There's a tremendous amount of stuff that I was just not aware of that you're going to find out in this interview with Marius. One of the coolest things I'm going to tell you right up front about this is one thing I did not know, and you want to listen to here. Did you know you can get every single bit, piece, and product of Oracle for free for download off of their websites? You can, and Marius is going to tell us how. I'm going to bring this on right now, and we will come back to you. You are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, but this is coming to you live, or, well, by Memorex, from the San Francisco Oracle Open World 2008.
Roy offered to get us together, and so that you were kind of the guy to talk to about Mix and some of the other stuff that was going on with that. Yeah. Maybe you can just give me a brief overview. What is Mix, and why people here at the show and even people that are not at the show might be interested in
Yes. So Mix is an interesting experiment. It actually didn't start in my group. It started with the Apps Lab group at Oracle. Are you familiar with the Apps Lab group at all?
A little bit myself, but why don't you tell...
Okay. So the Apps Lab group is a group that formed probably about a year and a half to 2 years ago to really go out and think of innovative ways to use software and see what's really is in the market. So about a year ago, pretty much the last Open World, they decided to just throw out a social network. It's a showcase of using Oracle technology, so it's all built on the Oracle database, Oracle App Server, so on and so forth. But it's using using Ruby to build the, as an architecture, as the, code base, which is more revolutionary, not standard Oracle, so to speak. So we're trying to, hey, let's do something completely new. And they built a social network with the hope to demonstrate some of the capabilities of our database and app servers.
They're using Ruby on Rails or JRuby?
Ruby on Rails and JRuby.
Both, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Both. JRuby's helps make the connection in the back end, but it's Ruby code. Right?
Okay.
So they just threw it out there, and immediately it started catching on because we believe that Oracle has this massive community already. So it was very simple for users to just kind of associate with it. And it was just the right time as well. It was right where Facebook really starting being on track. MySpace, Twitter, it came had been born pretty much at that time. So it was the right time for that thing. And very soon we had 5,000 subscribers. I think within the first month or so, we had about 5,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Now we are a year later. A year later, marketing group, which I represent, have taken a lot more engagement into mix, and we really want to build this out as the Oracle social network. We had a lot of debate in the beginning, should we have our own social network, should we just use it on Facebook, because we certainly had that option.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah, what went into making that decision? I mean, why was it better to do it?
We really feel that, from our perspective, we have critical mass. We have maybe 80,000 employees, 320,000 customers. Who knows how many of those customers then use Oracle there, right?
Yeah.
So we are in the millions. This conference has 43,000 attendees.
Yeah.
So we have something that most companies don't, and that's critical mass. So we felt that it's probably best to do it on our own. We have not so much to lose. And the other thing that's we read the Facebook's privacy policies, which scared us a little bit. So we felt that we can give better privacy policies on our end. We really feel that we can, we ask for registration. You can only see the content if you're registered. We make some choices around that as well because we feel we want to protect the community as much as we can. We want to really provide an environment that the community can feel comfortable talking about things. Our employees can feel comfortable talking about things. Of course, keeping in mind all the regulations that exist. But really just a very relaxed environment of communicating.
Yeah.
And we invested a lot of money in it and time, most of the time. I think that's really the most expensive value that we have here is not so much money. But we had quite a few people working on it, thinking through the whole process. And now we have 28,000 registered users. Mm-hmm. They're very active. And right before the show, we started the Participate program, which was another way of getting people into mix and starting the conversation.
Now, what is the Participate program?
So the Participate program started actually a year back. So that's actually an interesting story there as well. About a year and a half ago when I started on the Web 2.0 bandwagon, or 2 years ago, we had a conversation with our Chief Marketing Officer, Judy Sim, about Open World last year, actually. And she asked some casual questions, and I came in and said, hey, you know what? It's all about the user. It's like, what do you mean? Well, the user has value. Mm-hmm. And she said, this is a really interesting statement. Let's think about that. And she put together a two-day summit that she let me lead, where she invited the top, so to speak, leader influencers in the marketing organization from around the world. They sat for 2 days in a room in small groups and really think about user value Web 2.0.
Yeah.
And Karen Tillman, actually, which is the VP of PR, her group came up with, each group was challenged to come with something, an idea, something revolutionary, something to do around this topics. And she came up with this idea to take Oracle.com webpage down and ask people, give us your feedback. Just really sit back and, give us your feedback, ask them to participate. And out of that summit, which happened in January, slowly we evolved this program. We looked at the right tools, how can we do it, and it ended up to be participate, take the web page down, get all the feedback we can, use all our personal connections to involve the executives, the experts, the product developers, product managers, product marketing, to listen to what the information is that's coming in, mm-hmm. and then get back to them and continue a relationship on a one-on-one basis.
Now, were you concerned at all about kind of throwing out to users, how mm-hmm. do you want to change things? I mean,
yeah.
The famous story, I think it was Henry Ford, who said, if I asked my customer what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse.
Yeah.
Were you concerned you kind of would have gone down that road?
We're still concerned. We're learning. The truth of the matter is that we don't have a lot of the answers of the questions that we are posing internally. Mm-hmm. But we all feel we need to try something and jump in the water and see if we can start learning how to swim. So we're taking a little bit of a humble approach. We know we're going to get some of the stuff that we might not be able to respond to. We're going to get some stuff that's not valid or adds any value to the community too.
Yeah.
But it's better to try something and see how that goes and learn from it, and maybe next year we can come back and have it much more focused and specific.
Yep.
So it's a learning process, but we're learning by doing, which I think is very important, versus just talking about it and then be scared of not doing because of failure.
Yeah.
So we saw that's not an option. Not to do anything was not an option. Yep. We wanted to get out there and do something.
Really make it happen.
Yep.
Now as you said, you know, you had 5,000 people in the first month.
Yep.
You know, there's been a lot of issues with the Web 2.0 stuff, and especially with the social networking things and all that the scalability just seems to be, you know, a problem.
Do you mean scalability of the community perspective or as an IT hardware?
As in an IT situation where all of a sudden the systems start faulty. I mean, Twitter, of course, is the most recent example.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's not reliable, and they almost lost their ground they had made.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, how are you guys?
So one of the things we did, we definitely upgraded the systems. It was started on a 2-server machine in the beginning. We are now at 5 servers, latest, you know, things that Dell's shipping. It's a concern to us. You know, just to be honest, Amazon, but 20,000 is not quite the same as 60 million on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or what Twitter has.
Yeah.
It's also a nice problem to have, I think. I would not be, you know, sad if I have to go back to my management and say my machines are not holding up because I have too many users using it. That's really the problem I would like to have, because that those things is solvable. And it's on the Oracle. You know, that sounds not because I'm Oracle. But it is a great advantage that I have, that I work for Oracle and I have, like, first-class software to support this, right?
Yes.
And that is scalable. And, you
it's
know,
a little different than trying to do it on a lamp stack or something.
It is a big difference. And I have, you know, an IT organization to support me that's massive. I have some very bright guys supporting us. So I'm not personally too worried about being scalable.
Yeah.
But it's something that, because I'm an Oracle, so we have you know, I'm very spoiled in that respect. You know, I need a 11G. Here you go. You know, another company has to pay for it. I have the most scalable database for free. So
that's right. Well, and how about though from the social side of things? You know, we were just talking.
That's much harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from the social side of things, it's much harder. And you know, since I'm more of a Web 2.0 purist in many ways, I think technology and Web 2.0 are related, but they're really just tools to make socialness happen. So that is very, very challenging and hard to scale, actually. We take an approach of nurture from the distance, which seems, I think Justin probably talked about this, that's something Justin came up with, and that is be engaged, monitor who are the leaders, and trying to support them to move up so they can create new leaders below them, rather than being very upfront and doing one-to-one all the time. Now, for participants, we took the one-to-one approach, but our hope is really that this is just the beginning, and then that actually the community starts helping us out. And if you actually read some of the Apps Lab blogs when we start participate, one thing that came out which was great, there were three of the Oracle loyalists, that's how I call them, or fans, that immediately wrote in and said, hey, let's help out these guys. You know, they're going to get bombarded with questions and ideas.
Yeah.
Let's show them this is an active community, and let's help the community managers at Oracle. And that is the recipe that has to work, because it's not realistic that we're going to have an army of community managers trying to make sure everything is going. It's about having a few community so-called managers, activists, evangelists, that then can build other community managers within the community, and they are the ones that actually carry the community. That's how we try to scale.
And are you trying to apply any sort of, you know, organizational rules structure to the communities that are?
No, not too much. But we've taken initiatives. Mm-hmm. We have something called like a social media policy. And I don't know if that's what your question is. But we're trying to educate the employees that are part in the community. Just a lot of common sense rules of what they can talk about, what they cannot talk about. Mm-hmm. So we just want to make them aware. And it sounds silly, but it's just very basic. Stuff. Mix is external. The entire world can read it. You know, be aware of that. You wouldn't believe how many people thought it's just an internal thing. You know, don't talk about earnings announcements. Don't talk about new features. A lot of the very basic stuff. And we did, like, internal videos that are available online. We have printed material that we distribute. Every blogger, we have also a blogger program. If an Oracle, they need to, you know, sign up and say, yes, we're doing it. But that's the extent of it, because realistically, we won't be able to control much after that.
Yeah.
And we had, of course, from legal concerns, like, what if somebody posts inappropriate material? You know, are you guys going to read everything that's going through? Reality is, we can't. So we hope our community is helping us. So we have, like, you know, mark this as inappropriate. Once it's marked as inappropriate, we will actually get an email. We read it, we delete it.
Yeah.
But there's no way to completely control it.
Yeah.
However, we have more control than it would be on some other platform.
Yes. Yeah. More responsibility. But
more responsibility, more control. And while I think it's elusive to say somebody can control the conversation, in marketing, and obviously companies want to do that. That's, you know, PR. We want to control the conversation, but it's the best hopes we have is to participate in the conversation, and the best way to participate is on our platform.
Now, obviously, of course, it's focused around Oracle. It's around Oracle products and so on. But you know, you mentioned that employees have the ability to have their own blog in there. Is there a personal touch? I mean, I know just from doing a quick search on you that you're really interested in wine and wine tips.
Right.
You know, so is your Oracle blog? Do you touch on that at all?
No. So I have only internal blog, and the internal blog I focus on Web 2.0 technologies. And the reason I chose it to keep it internal is because I wanted to give some very concrete examples where it can be used, and I want to get in trouble with, you know, other people reading what I'm suggesting. That's why I did that part internally. We do ask that if it's hosted by Oracle, that the Oracle, that blog is relative to Oracle.
Okay.
So we have that expectation of the bloggers. But there is no policy which says you cannot have, you can do an Oracle blog and not use our platform, which a lot of people choose to do so. Mm-hmm. And you can have your own blogs and do as much as what you want.
Whatever you want.
But they are, you know, again, Oracle is a huge company, and there's different regulations depending what products you're working on. There could be restriction, like if you're government or, you know, so there's others. But we don't really set too much of the rules. And we have not have had any issues with anybody doing, you know, our biggest problem is actually that some people choose to blog or want to blog, and they don't follow through. That's much more of a worry than actually the content they're providing.
Well, and that's a typical issue all across the board. There's people that start out with the best of intention, and they're putting a post up every day, you know, or every week, and then
it sort of fizzles out.
Away.
That is more what we are monitoring and trying to go after them, saying, hey, could you, you know, you took this commitment, and we're trying to educate, and this is a commitment, it's a long run, it's not a sprint. That's part of the education that we're trying to do. But it's never really about content. We have never seen. And in the whole, an interesting part is because there was all the worry, you know, will competitors join Mix? Will, you know, will we start seeing malicious attacks by competitors?
Well, that's a really good question.
Right, So they were very worried. And the whole year that's been up, we didn't have a single offense.
Fantastic.
So it was, it's quite amazing.
Now, on the flip side, I'm sure, you know, you've got some success stories. Is there one that sticks out in your mind that says, you know, this was a perfect example of how Mix was used to solve somebody's problem that would have been more difficult? Or
you know, one really that's fun. I don't know if you followed our Open World blog, but we had one of the aces get stuck in an elevator.
Oh yes, yeah, we were talking to Justin about that as well.
So that was a fun one.
Yeah.
You know, other ones that say there's success, it's hard to say. And, you know, a lot of people were wanting to have certain clients for Mac. We delivered that. You can go back, and it was one of the higher voters. I think some drivers were missing, and then, you know, we reacted.
So this was something that came directly out of Mix, where people were saying, you know, this isn't happening. We can't get this connected. We need these drivers. And you guys were able to respond because of that.
Exactly. So. We raised the visibility with the product development team. We were able to build something, got it out. There's a lot of the comments, and that's because of the nature of Mix started was towards Mix related, and I'm just being honest. Probably like 60-70% of the suggestions initially were all about how to make Mix better, and we definitely took those to heart. So we, you know, there were no RSS, now it's RSS. They want to chat, now it's chat. Private groups were not there, now we have private groups, and on and on and on. And we really built based on the community feedback rather than marketing requirements at this point.
And now Mix has gone beyond that and is really impacting the other areas and groups in Oracle. Like you've talked about product development and app stuff.
And that's starting with the Participate program, right? So the first year was just getting the software somehow ready. Like you said, you know, making sure it scales right, making sure that the basic features that users need is there. So it was, I mean, low-key it's hard to say, but we didn't push it up front.
Yeah.
And starting with this open world, we said, okay, now it's time to go to the next level. And the next level is really to ask the community to participate and then take this feedback, which is now plan B, which we still have to, you know, hopefully we have an interview next year and have concrete examples, but that's now we're really going to look what the feedback is and get back to the users and start building our success stories out of that.
Put it together.
So that's really the focus now, and that's what the Participate program started.
Awesome. Cool.
It's a lot of...
like I said, I didn't have a script or anything. Is there anything that we've missed that people should definitely know about that you can think of?
I mean, not really. I think it's as far as enterprise or large company social networks go, I think it would really help us if they give it a try and give us feedback how it is. You know, and keep in mind we're not Facebook. But we're trying to be, and everything is fair, right? I mean, Facebook kind of opened the ground how communication can happen, and we believe that this communication is going to be in the next 5-6 years going to be a lot more dominant, and people are going to get used to it, and we'll expect that. So the more feedback we're getting today from any of your listeners or you know, people that are interested in Oracle, not interested in Oracle, just to go in and check it out and give us feedback, because that's how we're going to improve the product.
Excellent.
So that's
and the websites they can go to are theappslab.com.
Yeah, so OracleAppsLab.com. It's the blog from the Apps Lab team, which is a great blog. It's not only Oracle related, but a lot of the new technologies they talk about from the Oracle perspective. But it's not your typical Oracle product blog, so it's a really good blog. Mix.oracle.com, obviously, is the social network site. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's interested in more specific topics that the bloggers are covering in Oracle, they should go to blogs.oracle.com and you know, read through the 60-70 blogs that we have and see if there's something more specific to their needs and then follow them.
To get in there. Excellent. Okay. All right.
And we're back. Oop, except for Dave. There's Dave. All right.
I am back. It's good to be back.
Bring him back, too. We were listening to Marius Chortia. And again, he's Senior Manager, Project Management Office of Web Architecture for Oracle, and really the brains behind Oracle Mix, which you just heard quite a bit about. And just a real interesting person to talk to. Hope you got as much out of that as I did. I'll, of course, have some of those links that he mentioned up and available through the newsletter and on our website, techtalk.wrlr.fm, as always. And we should probably, you know, I'm going to mention the one last thing is that next week, I've got one more pre-recorded interview from the floor that we're going to do. I'm going to play for us the one of the VPs for Fortinet Security Systems. I was able to meet there at the show, and he was willing to talk a lot about the Fortinet products, particularly security products that they're coming out with and some new appliance-type stuff.
Security appliances?
Yes. Yeah. So
cool.
Real good stuff and real interesting. I think we made it a very kind of a universal type of information thing, so it's not just for for people that are looking for security appliances, but anybody that's interested in security and all that other good stuff. And we should probably do our, you know, what do you call those? The, cool sets of the week. Yeah, now we did, of
course. Pour yourself a martini and kick your feet up.
Come on down. And now, of course, I already talked about the big one that I was real excited about this week, which was that posterous.com. And again, I'll mention to you, if you send an email to post@posterous.com, and that's a Guy Kawasaki creation.
Guy Kawasaki.
Yeah, if you go online, you can find out a lot about him. He's an interesting character. He's done quite a few things. Just kind of need to look at that. Now, another one though that I've got, which I think is some cool stuff here, is. And I have not played around with this one a lot, but I want to tell you one thing, is Microsoft Labs. Microsoft Labs has got a lot of really interesting things going on. Now, you've probably heard of Google Labs. Google Labs has always got Google Earth, Google Moon, Google this. You know, the Google Labs is where Picasso first was, became popular and all this. Microsoft has got their own thing, Microsoft Labs. And they've got some neat stuff that I've played around with lately, things like Chart Advisor for Excel. You can get Chart Advisor for your Excel program. Product, which will tell you which chart makes the most sense for the data that you're looking at.
Oh,
you know, that's if you're doing a presentation.
Sounds very helpful.
Really neat stuff. Well, the one thing that I wanted to tell people about, you know, maybe not that many people are doing stuff with Excel right now, but everybody, of course, is big into the digital photos and trying to do more with your pictures. You know, you can make a slideshow and you can add music to it and you can do, you know, this and that and the other thing. But there's a really neat thing coming out of Microsoft Labs right now called PhotoSynth. And if you go to photosynth.net, and that's photo and then SYNTH, .net, you are going to find a really, really neat looking application there that will let you take your photos and put them into kind of a 3D environment. You have to take the pictures in a certain format and then you upload them, not a certain format, but in a certain manner so that you get as much of a 3D view of something as possible.
And so do you mean that there would be a depth of field in the picture, or do you mean that, you know, you would be like a cube type presentation?
It's more like a cube type presentation where you can spin around it, you can look into it, you can zoom in, zoom out, all this stuff, and you have a lot of interactivity with the object that you're taking your pictures of. And it's really neat stuff. Again, http://photosynth.net, and the other cool site was posterous.com this week. And you know, we're gonna have those guys from Urlesk are gonna be back on as well. I don't know if they're gonna make it next week. I'm trying to get them on next week, but if not next week, then they'll be here on the 18th for sure. And also on the 18th, we've got some other cool stuff coming up. I believe that is when we will, and I'm flipping my calendar right now. Who do we have coming up? We've got a lot of great stuff coming up, though. I know Taglocity, I was finally able to nail down. They're going to be here on the 18th. That's who's coming on the 18th.
Ah.
So the founder and CEO of Taglocity, which was one of the very, very few pay-to-play cool sites of the week that we've had, they're going to be on, and we'll talk to them. So, and it is getting close. We're going to have All the Hits is coming up with Rick and
Jeff
Davis and Zane.
Zane Adams.
You know, I never knew his last
name.
But they're doing a remote broadcast, you were telling me?
I'm not sure what the circumstances this week, but they're going to be coming to us from somewhere else besides the studio.
Very cool. So that's
a mystery.
You know, this is the 21st century. This is like Jetsons kind of cool stuff. You know, they're not even here, but they're here. So you want to stay tuned for that. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, send me an email at techtalk@wrlr.fm. I will throw you on there, and you'll also have access then to the podcast only songs of the week.
Cool.
We got some great stuff. I don't know what I'm going to put on this week. You know what? It's going to be truly a podcast only because I just haven't picked one out yet. So you're going to see that coming up at you only if you get the newsletter or only if you look online at techtalk.wrlr.fm. We're going to switch you over right now. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. And
see you next week.
We'll see you next week.